Never used to be this crazy on trade deadline day, was it?
Well, it's not even a deadline day. It's been happening now for, no, it hasn't. This is really, I wouldn't say unusual, but I think the teams were anxious to get going. And it makes sense if you're going to make a deal, and especially if it's a lot of them are rentals, you know, you get the player as soon as you can because everybody's in a different kind of fight, you know, for to get in or to, you know, to improve their standing.
And, you know, Scotty, one of the things we've been talking about, you look around the NHL, even you look at the East, there are maybe five or six teams that have a shot at coming out of the East. We know that the West is just, you know, 1-8 is, it's up for grabs. There are obviously some teams that are better positioned and better than others, but there are a lot of teams that I think this year, realistically, teams like maybe even Nashville, look at where they are in the standings and go, you know what, we got a shot at going to the Stanley Cup. Does that explain the fact that we saw so many trades in the week leading up to the deadline, the second most in NHL history?
I think what it is you have a league that has so much parity. I don't think it's going to change that much, the parity, because you see the draft choices. I mean, how do you rebuild a team? I mean, you rebuild with different ways, but I think because of the parity and the fact that a lot of teams feel the window of opportunity is not there. You know, the teams in the upper echelon feel the crunch that if you got so many years to get it done, you get so many chances to get in, and especially if you're in a high spot, you know, they've had a good year. If they're in a high spot in the standings, then they're just looking ahead and saying, you know, we're not going to, you can't keep all the players now when you have it, when you build up a good team, your third and fourth line players that have meant so much to your team, they don't want to stay third and fourth line players. And if they're on a powerful team, they sort of have to. And if they get a chance to get out or the team has to trade them, then they become, you know, into the higher price tags, you know, players. That's what I think happens. It's so hard now. It's just impossible, as we know. I mean, we live it every day in Chicago that you get some good young players. I mean, how was the team built? It was built because the team was very weak. I mean, they were, and your draft year, you know, obviously Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews came back-to-back years. Toews was the third pick overall, and Kane, Dale Talon, won the lottery that year and went from number four to number one, which can't even happen now. But so that's what I'm looking at, is the parity in the league and the window of opportunity for some teams, and also the lower teams, the opportunity to rebuild. I was looking at Arizona. I mean, they have to rebuild quite a bit. We know now without, you know, without Yandel and Vermette. But the thing I'm in a quandary now is we used to look, when I was coaching, we'd look down the stretch and you'd look, well, this team might not be able to beat this team. But you can't say that now because Arizona, they've depleted their ranks to get a lot of draft picks. They have two firsts, two seconds, two thirds in this year's draft. I don't even know going forward, probably next year a bunch. So that's what I feel.
Scotty Bowman joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. You know what's amazing is because the game has changed so much and we're in different eras, but the one thing that never changes around this time of year as teams, you know, begin to address their needs going to the playoffs, it's the adage, right? You can never have enough defensive depth. And you even go back to your, it was the same way with your Detroit teams that were winning cups. If you were ever going to make a move, I know a lot of guys didn't come in, but it was the, you know, Dmitry Mironov or Jamie McCown, or in comes Yuri Slager. You always had to have defensive depth and maybe even a guy or two sitting in the press box. And it, again, it's what we're seeing at the 2015 trade deadline.
Yeah, I can recall going back into, I think it was about 1970 when the Boston Bruins won the first of their two cups, 70 and 72. And the New York Rangers had, I mean, I knew because I was in St. Louis in 1967, and we made a deal with Emil Francis. He was building up the Rangers, and we traded early in the season. We had Ron Stewart, a real good, he had off to a great start, but he was 36, and Emil wanted him in a deal early in the season because his team was getting stronger, and he wanted Ron Stewart because Chicago was the team at that time, and I mean, really good young team, and Bobby Hull, they had nobody to really play against them, so we made the deal. And the Rangers got stronger, and if you look at the 1970 playoffs, I think they lost to the Boston Bruins in six games when it was a real tight series, but the Rangers lost two or three defensemen, and know that depth is so important on defense. They suffered because of that. That was when the Rangers, a little window, about 3 or 4 years, where they, Boston was a strong team, as we know. I mean, Boston were winning between 55 and 60 games, even 1 year 59. And so, yeah, defense, it worries you a lot when you're in the playoffs and you're especially later in the round, maybe the second or third round, all of a sudden you get a couple of bad injuries on defense that guys can't play. And, you know, to bring up a young kid and put him into that playoff run is tough. And if you have a veteran, we made deals when I was in Detroit. We made deals that we were looking for depth. I mean, 1 year I knew our defense was not that bad, but we've got Slava Fetisov from Lou Lamoriello. Mm-hmm. I call Lou, and he was sitting in the stands. He was like their seventh or eighth defenseman, and Lou was pretty good to deal with. I liked to deal with him at that time, and you know, I had a good relationship with him. And I said, look, Slava's not. He likes Slava too, and he said, yeah, I can let him go. I think we paid a third or fourth. I'm not sure. The people in the Detroit, I was talking with them. They said, my God, 38-year-old guy, you've given a third round pick. I said, well, you know, we want to try to win. And if we get injuries, well, we didn't even need injuries. Slava came in and had a great playoff run and even played another year and won another one. So I think you're right. Your defensive problems can really escalate if you get some injuries and you want to use a young kid in a big playoff game. It's pretty tough.
Joined by Scotty Bowman on the Jeff Blair Show. What was the difference to you, or what do you think the difference is for most NHL general managers, Scotty, between trading a first-round pick and a second-round pick? And I know a lot depends on where you're drafting. If you're drafting late in the first round, you can almost say it's an early second-round pick. But I think you know what I mean. You're sitting there and you've visualized a deal and you've got some options on the table. One of them includes your first-round draft pick. What do you have to get in return to move that first-round draft pick? Is there some sort of aspect of added value that takes a pick from the second round to the first round? I'll take that as a no.
Lost him.
The beauty of live radio and TV. Scotty Bowman, we will attempt to regain contact with Scotty Bowman. I'll have to remember what the question was.
Chicago is such an interesting case because everyone would give them a pass.
Oh, right? Yeah. They
get a pass.
Yeah.
But as we've all learned, look at this market. Yeah. I mean, how many chances do you really get? And Chicago is, again, as good as anybody, but Patrick Kane goes out for 12 weeks. Playoffs start in six.
Six, yeah.
So they go out to get Antoine Vermette.
And yeah, you would think that a team like Chicago would have a little grace period. Here we go. We're rejoined again by Scotty Bowman on the Jeff Blair Show. Scotty, I was asking you the question. The difference from a general manager's point of view between a second-round pick and a first-round pick. What do you have to get in added value to go from giving away your second-round pick to a first-round pick?
Well, you have to look at what you have in your organization. And I guess the best way I could look at it, and you know, when you give up even some prospects, you have to look, what have you got? You look at your depth chart in your organization, and what do you have coming? If you're a strong team, and you've probably set yourself up to have. I mean, if you have good depth, and you try to ripen your players the right way, you don't rush them along. Mm-hmm. Then, as long as you know you've got something coming, you don't have the kitchen's not the cupboard's not completely bare, and that's the risk you have to take. And you know now approximately where you're going to, what kind of a player you're going to be giving up. You can go into your amateur scouting and you can look, we're going to draft somewhere between, I mean, we're going to be, the draft choice is somewhere between, say, 20 and 25. Give me a list this year of what's there. And, you know, and this year's so much different because, I mean, there's no question that the scouts are, and they know what's going on. They're saying that both Connor Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel are generation-type players. And that doesn't mean there's not other players. A lot of people are saying that there's going to be between maybe 6 to 8 players in the draft this year that are going to make play on the NHL teams next year for those teams that select them. But I think when you look at, you have to look at the player, the type of player. If you're able to give this year's draft, you can get a pretty good run on the type of player that you're giving up, you know, within reason. I mean, you could the first 20 to 30 players, you pretty well get your list right. But if you're talking about giving up a future, that gets dicey for me, because you don't know how things are in the standings the succeeding year. I know when the Hawks just made the deal with Arizona, Stan made it with Dave Maloney, my son Stan, and they were talking about, you know, what year, first year, this year, or next year, as the Hawks have both picked, and they felt like this year you had to protect yourself with the Connor McDavid, Jack Eichel situation. I mean, it's a very slim chance that you wouldn't want to give a lottery pick away. But then you don't know next year. You know what the salary cap is not going to be that high. You have to make changes. I mean, you have to get rid of some players. You probably have to. So you don't know next year where you're going to be, and you could slide down. I mean, we know that. So I think you got to evaluate, and also you have to know your needs for right now. And they looked at their team, and they got a couple of young centermen that are going to be there in a year or two. But you know, to go on a playoff run is quite a bit. That's why Vermette became so appealing to them. You know, he was a good face-off player, and he's also been a good steady two-way, the type of player that Joel Quenneville likes.
Scotty, are we going to learn just how dynamic Patrick Kane has been to this team's playoff success, or is this a Blackhawks team that can absorb it easier than, say, another team could?
You have to change. Definitely, you're going to have to change your style. I mean, but they've been a pretty strong defensive club, and oddly enough, they're not a team that's feasted on the power play for whatever reason. Nobody can put a finger on it. Power play has been running around 15th, 16th, 17th in the league, and some teams, if they don't have a power play going, they're not going to win games. But the Hawks have won some games this year, and Patrick has been a terrific player all around. But he's so dynamic when there's even a player less or two on the ice. So I don't think they're going to have to change an awful lot. Obviously, the way they play, They try to play defense first, and what they're gonna miss is his component in the tight games. It seems that's to me the difference in a lot of players. I mean, you can look at stats and you can say, oh my God, he's a 25 goal man, he's a 30 goal man, or a 75 point man, but are the points realistic? I mean, you have to really analyze, and that's where people wonder about analytics. I mean, they're not the end all for sure. But I used to really like to figure out who gets the goals in the big games, who decides, who gets them in the third period, who, you know, when the game is on the line, things like that. And that's where you miss Patrick Kane. But we know the playoffs are much tighter, and sure, he's been a good playoff performer. So I think that's what, you know, he's got over a point a game, I think. I'm pretty sure if you look up his record. But
right.
That's a quandary for them for sure.